Hit it.
Yeah.
So beautiful, man.
It's that time of the week again. It's time for Racks and Stacks Podcast with your host, Gabe Bisa.
And Aaron Oster.
We are having some good times here this morning. It's 5. We're enjoying it.
It's past 5.
I know it is.
5:30.
5:30.
Yeah. Oh, man, but you're really working on your radio voice. You're really getting it.
It's
5:29 from Drive Time here. It's Gabe Bisa coming at you live Saturday morning. Racks and Stacks.
I'm living out a personal fantasy.
Right now you're here on the Travelers All-Stars playing Sweet Loneliness by Eduardo Lalo Hammond. That's right. Oh, yes. My God.
We could do this all day.
We could.
Forget work. Forget whatever else
it's
is going on
at 7. Let's keep it truncated here, buddy.
Yeah.
Oh, man. This is like in a mustard yellow 45. It's just beautifully spinning right now.
All right.
I felt really old the other day. Somehow I came across this this reel on Instagram about this, like, this guy born in the 2000s he's like talking about the amazement of what a record is. A piece of vinyl that is pressed with little grooves and the needle vibrates. It's like, man, I feel old. This is not new technology. Why are you talking about it like you just discovered it?
You know, it's not new technology, but I will give hipsters and the young folks who dig vinyl a lot of credit because they brought it back.
They brought it back, but now they're bringing back cassettes.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes the same sense. You know, like, I was talking to a mutual friend of ours, Eric, who's like, he bought some cassettes.
Yeah, he likes the cassettes.
He's an audiophile. So,
yes,
like,
yes,
whenever
yes.
there's, like, a piece of equipment, I drove with him out to, was it Oxford, New York? Like, right near the lake, right near...
Out near Rochester.
Yeah.
That's where that came from.
That's right, yeah. We picked that up then, yeah. And we picked up all this old equipment that Eric bought at auction. And he spent, like, I don't know, a month, you know, repairing it and putting it back together. But, like, he put a cassette on. It was a Carolyn Rose cassette. It sounded great. I mean, of course, the technology that's coming up is, like, it's matching it, and... It's just another sort of platform to listen to music on. But man, like, I didn't think cassettes were going to come back.
No, I mean, man, I used to love making mix cassettes.
Totally, I would plug in my headphones into the mic jack and speak into the left ear, and like be like,
this one is what I was thinking about when we went to the beach that time, and. And it was like, this is Blink-182, here you go. This is off a Kerplunk album, it's really good.
I taped this one off of the radio, yeah. And I caught it just after the intro.
Oh my God, yeah.
Went through a lot of work to get your sound bites right back then.
It meant something when you made a mixtape for somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's hard for me now. Like, I tried to make some, I made some mixes for some friends. On Spotify, and it was like, with Apple Music, at least I had a library of all the songs that were in alphabetical order, but with Spotify, it's like all the playlists and all the stuff that I've ever liked. It's a massive list, and it's not collated the same way, so it's a lot harder to make a mixtape for somebody. I mean, a lot harder. I've got every song ever written at my disposal. I have to take literally 5 more minutes to do it.
I took Mom's Sandy Patty cassette and I taped over the edges so I could record over it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I recorded over Harry Nilsson's The Arrow to put some like Megadeth demo that I found somewhere.
When your dad was in his car, he's like, oh, I'm going to listen to this, and puts it in.
Little Nilsson.
What?
And the bats come.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're reliving our youth just a little bit. Man. Simpler times.
Yeah. Well, we'll skip over the Fish, the section when I listen to a lot of Fish.
we're going to just do that.
Yeah, it's funny. I went for a little adventure snowboard with a friend of a friend I didn't know. I don't know if I call it a blind date, but it was just sort of like it was a adventure.
Hopefully, you weren't skiing blind.
No, but we were talking about like white people music from Connecticut, and she dropped Dave Matthews and Coldplay, and I was like, oh my god, like get out of my head. Like I don't listen to that music anymore, but it's such a distinct part of my life that like. Oh my god, it was it's a strange thing to listen to, that's for sure. I can't believe it. Oh my god.
Ah, the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah, Marissa, if you're listening to this, like thank you very much for bringing that back in my life. I think Ants Marching was listened to on the way home for sure.
Oh.
Yeah. So I don't know, man, you wanted to talk about food today. It's Passover.
It is Passover.
It's the Exodus. Oh, man, you should have had some Exodus on. You have to play us out to that. I'm going home. I'm going home today to see my mom and my my sister and my brother, my brother-in-law and the kids, my nephews. And this has always been, like, this is a big part of why food, I think, is such a big part of my life is because, like, Jewish holidays certainly, well, let's kind of start at the beginning, right? So, like, my family... is my father's side of the family was from Kiev, like from the Ukraine, and my mom's side of the family is from Hungary. So when it comes to like, that's Hungary is kind of on the border between two different styles of Eastern European Jewish food, right? There's the Sephardic, which is like, if you can think of it as Middle Eastern in flavor, like rose water and like more paprika, obviously paprika, but like dates and figs and lamb and a little bit more of like exotic flavor profiles versus the Ashkenazi, which is like everything is brown, shades of brown and sad, and usually seasoned with the tears of old Jewish women.
Seasoned with the tears.
Yes, I cry. I cry. It's why you have salt. It's too salty. I cry too much. You do not call. That's why.
Sorry. But I grew up with these like really delicious dishes that were amazing, but like what my mother and grandmother could coax out of an onion is like incredible. So my mom used to make these Russian potatoes. It was like, I don't know if she called them Russian potatoes. That's just, you know, like these are the names that we have in our house. But it was like 15 pounds of onions caramelized into like this really, like, really just like it, like caramel sweetness. And then she just pour potatoes into it, fill it up with chicken stock, and just cook it down. Oof. You know, and it's like, that's it. That's really all there is to it. But like, man, the onions took a long time. And my, like I said, I think we talked about this maybe a couple episodes ago, but like, I grew up in a house where like everybody had a dish. My sister was really good with, she was really good with desserts. So she like, she made a peach cobbler that was really good. Actually, now I think of it, cobblers were her thing. My dad fancied himself an all-around cook, but he loved to try to cook like fried rice from like Benihana, you know, circa like 1987. He'd like put the pan out there and he'd try to like make like throw the lemon up and catch it on the fork and then squeeze it into the pan for no one, just for himself, you know. But you know, like you grow up as a kid and you see that and you're like, oh man, that's like, he's having fun in the kitchen, right? It's not just like a chore. And then he would make the dishes I remember him making that were really important were like, there were three dishes. One was a potato hash that he would make in the morning, which was just like, it seemed like a lot of work just to make breakfast, right? And potatoes are like, as a kid, they're this elusive thing. This is some hardcore shit we're talking about, right? I'm just realizing that we're talking about potatoes. But so like, I don't know. I grew up in a house where like, breakfast was a big meal. My mom, you know, taught me to make scrambled eggs at an early age, and like there was no problem going to the kitchen and making food as long as you were cleaning up. I didn't really get the cleaning up part, you know, because I just get distracted and walk away. But
oh, Nintendo's on. What?
Yeah, exactly. But we went. My dad taught me to make this potato hash, and then he'd make what's called like matzo brei, or like fried matzo, which was just like you take, it's like matzo and scrambled eggs. Which if you haven't had matzo, it's like the most unexciting cracker you've ever had in your life. But it is traditionally eaten around this time because this is Passover, and you're not supposed to eat any leavened bread till the 4th. So today's 27th of March to April 4th, no leavened bread, which is fine. I remember as a kid that seemed like a real challenge. Like everything. Like I'd pick up this orange and I'd be like, can I eat this? Is there any leavened bread in this? You know, just like make a case for my mom to be like, come on, just like a little bit. But like we just eat a lot of matzah in the house. And this time of year, you know, like I would argue that this is like Jewish Thanksgiving, you know, as far as like food's concerned. I mean, everybody's kind of the same. Brisket is the main, I mean, it's your kind of like, that's your fastball, so to speak.
Brisket.
Yeah, but not, it's a different kind of brisket. So this brisket that my mom makes, again, starts with 1,000 pounds of onions, like slowly caramelized with carrots, like whole carrots. And then the brisket itself is like seasoned, it's seared, and then it's braised for a long time, but then it's flipped, sliced, and then braised again. Nice. And that's kind of the go-to thing for this holiday. I think we've had leg of lamb, which for Passover is kind of like the thing, you know, the sacred lamb, you sort of smear the blood over the doorpost. We don't really do that anymore.
No?
No. Young children. We take the blood of young children, obviously. Yeah. We kidnap them, and we, you know, take their blood, and we smear it over the table, and the whole thing, and, you know. It's always the cleanup, man. Yeah. They hate it. They hate when you take their blood and just kick them back out on the street.
So one time, I'm not Jewish, but we had a...
Tell us about how you kidnapped children and took their blood.
No. So my parents had invited some friends over to do a Seder in the house.
Oh, that's really nice.
And it was cool. And it was a great experience.
For a non-Jewish family to do that?
Whatever.
No big deal.
I'm just thinking about the fact that in the middle of the Seder, I grabbed the telephone and went under the table and ordered a pizza.
Dude. Not cool.
No.
On so many levels.
I'm thinking about it heavily now, like, oh yeah, that was probably very, I was maybe 14 or 15, but it was new to me.
Yeah, did you also pierce your eyebrow at the table as well, too?
No,
yeah.
But man.
Fuck you, man.
I'm just thinking about it now, like, that was way more offensive than I probably expected it to be.
It's the little things.
Yeah, you know, when you're young and you don't think about
pizza?
It.
Yeah, was there meat? Was there pepperoni in the pizza?
Oh, yes, totally.
Yeah. Do you have any pork that I can serve with cheese on bread on Passover?
Ham, bacon, whatever.
Bring it to me, please.
Yes. So I apologize to my parents for that.
On the other hand, there's usually a seat. So for Passover, there's a lot. It's meant to be like a relaxing meal. So there's like... You're supposed to sit in a reclined position. You're supposed to eat matzah. You eat bitter herbs as opposed to not eating bitter herbs. You drink a lot of wine. It's a celebration, right? We've been freed. We leave Egypt. We find the Holy Land. It's this whole beautiful story. And there's a lot of great stories that we used to study. My dad had a good friend. Who Rabbi Matt, who used to do these, like, he'd do these Saturday morning, no, he'd do, it was Sunday morning, like, Bible study, or Torah study, or study the Talmud, and we'd have these great discussions, and then go back home and have, like, another Passover dinner. It would be really, really awesome. But the space between leaving Egypt and finding Israel was, like, there's a bunch of deep stories in there, and we don't have to talk about that, because we're talking about food, but, like, it's both an oral and a written history, which I think is kind of cool. And from a, like, to tie that into food, a lot of these recipes sort of, they get passed on and meant to be held within their same integrity as they were, you know, originally designed. And I think that's kind of cool. You know, like the recipes that my mom has been making as long as I've been alive. So, you know, almost 40 years have been recipes that have been in her family for, you know, she's 74. My mom just had a Don't want to get this wrong.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. Well, it was Valentine's Day, so it's just like a month ago, I guess. A month and a half ago. But, you know, my sister has taken a lot of those recipes as well, too, and she's now cooking them for her family. And then my brother-in-law's family is from Israel, and they have a tremendous, like they come from a massive family of great cooks. So there's going to be a lot of really rich culinary history that's getting passed on to my nephews right now, which is pretty cool. And, you know, because I'm a cook as well, too, like, they're just starting to get old enough that where they're cooking for themselves and they're, like, interested in this kind of stuff. And I think the more that the restaurant sort of gets established, the more time I want to spend with them and show them the stuff that I do. My sister's like, take them, please, for a week. It'd be great. But I think if we can, we can talk a little bit about the foods that we grew up with around the holidays. You know, like, I was talking about brisket. Matzo balls are a big thing here as well, too. My grandmother passed in December, but she was 105, man. And she was still cooking matzo balls, I think, last Passover.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's funny if I think about my grandma, like, sticking around. I mean, I don't want to say stick around, but that sounds bad. But, like, I don't know. You could argue that she lived to cook for those holidays. Like, I mean, it was pretty great to be around, and she'd make this broth with chicken feet. It was like this big deal, these incredible matzo balls. And she was a great cook, and I watched the two of them cook together my whole life. And then spending time with my grandma, where like my mom would drop me off and I'd hang out with her for a few hours, and she'd be cooking stuffed cabbage, or she always had something in the fridge to share with me, which was really like, it was a really beautiful lesson about like always having food for your guests. But I don't know. I mean, this time of year, as older I get, the more I'm like looking forward to these holidays. Cause I don't know that, you know, things change. They have more significance over the years. Before, it would just be like, you take for granted that your mom spent an entire day. Like, both my parents worked, you know, and to take 2 days off to cook and shop and prepare and set the house. You know, Passover was like, we'd have like 20 people for Passover, you know? And like, it's not a huge house, but it's a lot of work to be done. There was, it was a tremendous amount of work because the Passover Seder is a long meal. You're starting with like, there's lots of like props that are needed on the table. There's lots of haroset, which is like supposed to represent like the mortar that the Jewish slaves were using to, you know, make the pyramids, build Egypt for the pharaohs. But it's like a lot, like it's a lot of prep. And I, you know, maybe that's where part of my willingness to do this kind of manual work came from, is that I always felt great that the house was full of people. And it always felt like my mom, she made so much, she put so much intention into these kinds of meals that the house felt like electric, you know, like it felt fantastic. And I think as a kid, first of all, there's people you don't see all the time. And as a kid, you're like the center of it. Well, I don't want to say the center of attention, but like my sister would say that I was definitely trying to be the center of attention, but you know, like, it's exciting. There's people in your house and you don't normally see these people, and you know, they pinch your cheeks and they ask you about you. And for the first time, you're like able to talk about yourself and things you're excited about with someone else who can understand what you're saying. You know, I'm like 9, 10, 11 years old. And I remember those as like really formative, great Passovers. Plus there's like a witch hunt, not a witch hunt.
That's not we just what it throw is. In the witches there.
I was going to say manhunt, but
do
like,
they flout?
Bread, apples, very small rocks.
Small rocks.
there's a thing called the afikoman, which is like, it's a piece of matzah that my dad would hide around the house. And he would hide it always in two places.
I was just going to ask if he had special spots.
Yeah, I mean, we had dogs, so it was just definitely a couple years where like they were found and eaten.
It's in the couch.
Yeah, but like, I don't know, man. You know, so Passover is a big one. breaking the fast for Yom Kippur, even like Rosh Hashanah, a big one, like Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur go together. There's a big sort of meal for Rosh Hashanah, and then there, you know, a week later, I think it was 9 days later, there's Yom Kippur, and then there's a fasting for that. But with Passover is kind of the big meal. Hanukkah has a couple of good dishes, right? You're eating potato latkes and you're having fried food, donuts, that kind of stuff. But I don't know, man. That's why I say it's like the Thanksgiving is, because it seemed like the big meal of the year, like the one that everybody was sort of gearing up for. It's got all the like matzo balls and brisket and like kugel and all the things, which is like a casserole with egg noodles, which I don't like. But growing up for you, man, like you're living close to, I don't know, what were the staples that you grew up with for these big holidays, like Christmas or for Easter or for Thanksgiving? I mean, this is Easter essentially.
Yeah. I can say that I have a mother who is awesome, but she was never blessed with the cooking skills that were so she's Irish, and so everything was boiled. Once I started dating my wife, or soon to be wife, or whatever, when I first started dating, I would go over to their house and we'd have steak, and I'd be like, "Why isn't it so tough?" And
yeah,
like, well, because you just put it on and then you flip it over and there you go.
Yeah.
Oh, my mom usually leaves it on for
you. Don't
20
boil
minutes.
The steak. You're not boiling the steak. What are you talking about?
If it doesn't come out with shoe leather, it's not done well enough.
Yeah, I was really lucky to grow up in a house where like food was a big part of it. You know, people were offered. My mom always. I grew up where my sister and I had dinner with my parents every night. You know, my mom cooked every night, and she'd cook. Breakfast was usually cereal, but like my mom would make. She'd make, you know, scrambled eggs for me if I needed to, or there'd be like challah toast in the house, which is like big, delicious, rich, like brioche. And man, like just there'd be a couple days a week, like Sunday mornings, my dad would make that potato hash, or he'd make fried matzah. I mean, there's always a box of matzah in the house, also because it never goes bad. It lasts forever. And the process of making fried matzah is like taking sheets of matzah and like wetting them, putting them in a bowl and like crumbling them up, and then then scrambling eggs with it, and then frying that in a pan.
I'm getting hungry, actually.
I mean, you might be hungry, but then you will have difficulty digesting for the next month or so. Matzah is really good for a couple things. It's for making paste, you know, for if you're making a pinata, you know, you can sort of break it down and add water, becomes glue. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have a lot of characteristics. I remember like people would bring over like, you know, Middle East, like Israeli matzah, like real cool, like specialty matzah that would be like cooked in a different oven or like in a wood fired oven. And it still tastes the same, which is to say like nothing. But people would like be like, "Oh, I got this fancy matzah. Yeah, it's like $10 a sheet. It's like really good.
But it's got Rabbi Shalom on it."
Yeah. Well, I don't exactly know what that means.
Is that like a Chef Boyardee?
Oh, that's funny. Okay, I got you.
I apologize if that was insensitive.
No, I think Rabbi Shalom as a brand of food might go over well.
Chef Boyardee.
But yeah, man, like I grew up with these particular things as being a big part. I think it's funny that I cook brisket for a living now. But it's a cheap cut. You know, and that's kind of the nature of what brisket is meant to be, which is that, like, it's a feast, but, you know, I like these recipes that were about sort of using alternative parts of the animal. This wasn't about a steak. This wasn't about, like, a fancy meal. It was, like, how to feed a lot of people. You know, my parents spent a good amount of energy feeding a lot of these people, but I think that, you know, as brisket as a traditional cut is a pretty cheap cut. It's a poor person's cut of meat because it's tough. It requires a lot of cooking and a lot of time to prepare. You know, like my mom takes, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 hours to cook this brisket. You know, that's a lot for a person.
It's a lot of prep time.
It's a lot of prep time. So, yeah, I think that was, those are the sort of the big parts of this holiday that I miss now, that I'm looking forward to, you know. I mean, it's a Saturday in the end of March. The business is sort of like A-OK, is getting a little bit busier right now. And I think that I took so much, it was so easy for me to sort of say no to these things or be like, make excuses not to come home. And I don't think it was intentional in the sense of being like, I thought I was too busy to do this kind of stuff. Because I think, you know, so you sit at a table and you tell the story of, you read the Haggadah, which is the story of Passover, you know, and you ask, you know, the youngest kid there asks the four questions, you know, why is this night different from other nights? Why do we recline? Why do we eat bitter herbs? Why do we dip only once? And, you know, you feel disconnected. This is just a tradition. It's a ritual. It doesn't have any significant meaning. And the older that I get, you know, I don't have kids. I don't have a house where we do our own Passover. And I haven't really been too connected with the Jewish community up here in North Adams. But I don't know. I mean, I think it doesn't have the same significance. It doesn't have a religious significance for me. It's like a cultural thing. It's like bagels, you know, like
that's just what we do.
That's just the food that was there. You know, it's not necessarily a Jewish food, but I associate it with all of the Jewish things. Like when I was a kid and I went to Sunday school, there was like a person who would come and they would bring bagels from, I bet they were H&H, but they'd bring bagels from New York or from Westchester County. And they'd like sell bagels, so you could like buy those bagels. You'd ask your mom for money, and you'd get like a half a dozen bagels or so. And then me and my buddies, that was what we would do. Like, we'd sit in the back in Sunday school, and we'd make fart noises, and we'd eat bagels. Like, we'd like scoop out the bagels. Man, this is not that hilarious, but like we'd scoop out the bagels and like make little like, you know, we'd make like little like snorkels out of them, or like we'd put like a piece of paper in there and. I don't know, man. Like, we just play with our food and throw the inside of the bagels at other people, and I mean, real outlandish shit. I mean, we were pretty hardcore, you know.
The rebels.
Yeah, that's what we did. But you know, I think like that's what brisket means to me. Like these foods, matzo ball soup. They're a cultural. It's a cultural component. It doesn't seem like a religious thing, even though that's the only time we eat them, and they're definitely a Jewish food. But my like Jewish identity, I think, is more based around food than it's based around the religious belief system. Not that I'm completely agnostic, but like, I don't know, man. I never connected with the religion part of it as being a component. I just liked. I was growing up and I was around people who kind of understood the same things that I understood, you know, like, and with food, who like, you talk to someone who's like, did you grow up with matzo balls? And like, yeah, I grew up with matzo balls, and matzo balls are kind of weird and like, they're not a normal food. And you can sort of have this sort of bond with people about the fact that they grew up with the same weird, you know, obscure food that you weren't eating ever, you know, but like we knew about it, you know. Are you into gefilte fish? Yeah, I'm into gefilte fish, totally. Ever eaten horseradish by the spoonful? Yes.
Yes.
Let's do this.
My eyes were...
Yeah. You know, like, that's the kind of fun about... That's the thing I liked about Judaism growing up, and that I still like about it, is that, like, there's a really significant, like, culinary attachment to the importance of these parts, these sort of calendar dates. And I think that Christianity has that as well too, when it comes to like Easter and Christmas and Thanksgiving. Well, at least as Americans, right? Like, there are food holidays that have significant foods along with them. And to be a young Jewish kid and have something that we can talk about with my other Jewish friends about that, just growing up, you don't appreciate it, but now I really do. You know, like, I've got a couple Jewish friends here, and I'm like, I'm bringing you back matzo balls. Like, it's happening. You know, they're like, oh, great, because my dad's matzo balls were terrible growing up. And I'm like, no, 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 I got the thing. My mom does this whole thing. It's my grandma's recipe.
Were they sinkers, not floaters?
Totally, man. See, look at you, man. You learned a lot at that Seder.
I did, eating
Domino's under the table.
Son of a bitch.
No, I definitely can say that I've been to a couple Seders, and I enjoyed the whole experience. And probably didn't enjoy it when I was younger, but I can appreciate the sentiments and the thoughts and all of the basis for everything.
Yeah. My dad used to make an Excel spreadsheet for the timeline. I mean, that was like, that's what was his job, right? Like, so, oh yeah. And there would be the main table, which would seat sort of eight, which my sister and I were never at. As soon as there were younger kids in the room, we would be moved to what was known as the Heckleites. Like, we'd be like, we would sort of like, you know, like, I don't know if anyone's familiar with like the Borscht Belt, but like, you know, in the 40s and 50s and 60s, you know, Jewish comedians would go through the Catskills and they'd play these sort of summer resorts, and it was known as the Borscht Belt. And like, that's how my dad would get up there, and my sister and I would sort of, you know, Mystery Science Theater / Borscht Belt break his proverbials, you know. And we would be known as the Heckleites. And I miss that, because there's no one to hassle. He was so adamant about like being, reading it, like getting the flow down, like he was orchestrating this thing, and it really meant a lot to him. And we really, boy, did we put him on the spot, man. God, I can remember his face turned really red. But you know, you're supposed to drink. You're supposed to drink a lot. So it's supposed to be rowdy. It's supposed to be a lot of fun. I'm sorry, I'm going to blow my nose.
You didn't ever make an Elijah dummy or anything like that, put it in the seat?
No. No, but we'd always have the door open. I don't remember if anyone ever showed up or we had any of those stories of like, you know, someone knocking at the door for dinner to be Elijah. You know, you leave a sort of a seat open at the table. Symbolically, you know, as to like, you have to welcome people into your home for that evening. But you know, I'm happy to pass on. I'm happy to sort of to grow older and take a different perspective on these recipes that I grew up with, and like to integrate more of this into what we do professionally. But it's just nice to have these moments where like I can still connect with my mom on these things. I can still go home and talk about this food and watch her do it. And now, as you know, as at 40, it's like, man, I have so much more respect for my parents. We were just talking about this earlier. It's like, we've got a lot of young guys on our team at AOK. And a friend of mine was telling me that like the gap between 20 and 40 seems like an impossible distance. Like, man, 40 is like...
That's a lifetime.
It's a lifetime.
That is a lifetime.
But the difference between being at 40 and looking at 80... Excuse me. Man, I'm like all burps and a little verklempt here. But like the distance being at 40 and looking at 80 seems like, oh yeah, that's great. Like I'm settling into myself as an adult, you know, finally. I mean, this is like # OG late bloomer right here, but like... settling into what I want, what I believe in, who I am, business is sort of set up. Things are becoming less tumultuous by the day. And as I look ahead, it's like, oh, I get to enjoy the next 40 years pretty confidently, because I don't have to spend the next, like to look at 40 from 20 is like, I don't know who I am. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know where I'm going to live. You know, I don't know who I'm going to love. I don't know like what car I'm going to drive. All I am is like dreams and spastic and impulsive reaction. And now it's like, I'm feeling great as I look forward, and to look back over those years and be like, man, I really, really struggled with appreciating all the people who were making so many sacrifices to help me get to this point. that now I get to go home, and I think that's why it means more to me now. It's not about the religion part of it, because that I can talk to any Orthodox rabbi about the beauty and the uniqueness and the interest and the sort of the fascination I have with the history, and we can argue and we can talk about all the cool things that the Talmud talks about and the Torah and all these great stories I grew up with, but that, to me, it doesn't resonate from like a spiritual level. The food's more impactful for me. I mean, maybe that sounds obvious because that's my professional work, but that's where it resonates. And so now I'm looking, when I go home, I want to spend more time with my mom and my sister and learn about these recipes and cook with them. We're going to do a pop-up at AOK in April with my brother-in-law, who's got these incredible Israeli recipes. And like, I want to hold those and like build a compendium of recipes that are our family, like our shared family recipes, to pass on to whoever, you know, not kids, but like, you know, I want to support the importance of these recipes as for strangers and sure to share it.
Mm-hmm.
That's in the business that I'm in, is the sharing of my own memories. So when I think about where, why I think these holidays are more important to me, I don't want to miss them, is because like, one, I don't know how many more I got left with my mom. It was my mother's mother who was 105 when she passed. So I'm hoping that I've got another, Jesus, to say 25 years, my mom would be awesome.
Hopefully a lot.
Yeah, a lot, you know.
Many, many years.
Yeah, you know, another 100 years for sure. But I appreciate the preciousness of these things now. And I want to make more time for it in my life. Because if people don't get their barbecue sandwich on time, that's really not that important. I'd have nothing to prove when it comes professionally. So, you know, like, we close, even if we closed for a weekend, I don't care. I know that sounds like I care about the business, but making my family a priority is something that I didn't do because of my career for so many years. Like, Alex and I were really dedicated to working so much on the things that were right in front of us, which was like our business, setting up a home, trying to settle into the places that we'd moved over the years. And now that we're kind of established in North Adams, and this is, you know, our respective homes, like, I love living here. It's like, okay, now I want to go back and make some more time for these kinds of conversations and, you know, lounge a little bit more and spend a little bit more time cooking with my mom, because I realize how important it is. And my sister's been incredible. I mean, you want to talk about somebody who is dedicated to holding the family line and really preserving these memories. My sister is incredible. And she's raising these incredible boys with her husband. And like Roy and Sammy and Ben, they're getting a really rich Oster history, as well as like Roy's Israeli roots, you know, this deep family history that Roy is sharing with them. And the kids, they all speak Hebrew in the house. Like, I mean, that's their first language is Hebrew, and it's beautiful to be around it. And my sister is like really doing an incredible job of like integrating not only like our family recipes, like the tuna salads, like the rice-a-ronis. I know that sounds crazy, but like shake and bake. And my sister's an incredible cook, and she's been cooking for the kids, you know, their entire lives. And it's awesome to see her so protective of these family recipes and the importance of sitting around the table together eating. And food is important. The kids are not picky eaters. Like, they're great eaters. And I always thought, man, like, if you do one thing for your kids, it's like, don't let them be scared of trying new foods.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly like, I hated certain foods as a kid, but I think it's just like, I think it was a palate development thing. Like, I hated olives. And then one day I was at a bar and I was like eating olives and I was like, these are incredible. Are these all? These are olives. Like, what was I talking about? Like, because I was a kid who like loved salt. You know, I don't know why a lot of my nephews are like putting salt on the table, and they're like a lot. Not a lot of my nephews. Like, both of my nephews are like salt fiends. But then, I remember like a lot of my friends growing up were like. I don't know if there was like some sort of sodium deficiency that was going around.
Sodium was bad for you.
Well, maybe that's it. I didn't grow up in a house with a lot of junk food, so like salt was it. But man, like, oh God, I remember this one thing my dad used to make. He'd make, what would he call it? I think it was like Russian toast. He'd get this particular kind of rye, made at this bakery in Providence, where it was sort of like it was kneaded a lot less. So they'd make the dough, they'd cut it, and then just bake it. So it was like dense and really like get that beautiful sort of like spicy kind of bitter rye flavor. Oh man. And he'd toast it until it was like almost burnt. And then he would take a clove of garlic, of raw garlic, and put it on a fork, and then dip the garlic in a bowl of salt, kosher salt, and then scrape it all over the toast, and then keep going back in and scraping this garlic, and then spread butter over that.
Ooh.
It's great. But like, first of all, it's first thing in the morning. You are like, your breath is slamming. But also, like, it's a lot of salt. It would be like salted butter on top of like salted garlic on top of like rich bread. I can see you're like, why would somebody
actually sounds good to
why
me.
Would somebody do that? I think I did it once where like we did that recipe at a restaurant I worked at where we did that, but then we did something on top of it. We did like roasted vegetables I know what it was. Is we did sort of there's a Spanish tapas dish called pan de tomate where you take sort of crusty bread like a ciabatta or whatever and you grill it and then you take a fresh tomato and you grate the tomato over this like toasted bread and you get this really beautiful thing. So we did it with garlic and then we did this like garlic toast that my dad used to do over this ciabatta and then we'd like scrape a tomato over the top of it. So it was like, and then a little extra virgin olive oil and a little bit of pecorino. It was delicious. But I mean, its origins are in, you know, like, this week on Who Will Get the Heart Attack? It's like, you know, this garlic toast, traditionally not butter was smeared on it, but schmaltz, which is like chicken fat, which is a lovely ingredient, but also, like, heart disease runs in Eastern European family. You know, that's not an uncommon, that's why I love butter and rich, salty food. It's because it was just like such a, oh man, just so good going down. But boy, oh boy, like I think if I have a really rich food right now, it's like I have to kind of do my dad's move. I kind of like one hand on the table, one hand on my heart. Like, oh God.
Make sure they're both there.
Yeah, just like steady myself because this is going to hurt. Yeah, did you grow up with any like weird? Your mother's Irish.
Yes.
Where is your dad
from? My dad's French.
Okay.
So that's where the Bisaw comes from.
Yep.
And so we didn't really have these family like so Christmas, Easter. Yeah, those were very important holidays, family holidays, and. I really started trying to rack my brain and thinking about, you know, what's something that I remember from being a kid. And I don't know if we necessarily had anything that was specifically ours or like a family tradition. I think as I've gotten older, I have tried to put that tradition into my family.
Oh, cool.
St. Patrick's Day has always been a huge deal. I don't say that it, you know, trumps Easter or Thanksgiving as far as like the actual meal, and the breadth and, you know, just all of that.
Yeah.
But St. Patrick's Day has become probably one of my favorite holidays that I look forward to every year. Not just because it's, you know, the Irish holiday and all of that, but
no, getting your kids to drink 4 or 5 cans of Guinness is important, man. I mean, those are the things that were like, those are the memories they're going to remember.
So the keg stands and all of that stuff. No, we're not doing that, Mom. but as an Irish family, I have taken some time to sort of create our own, like, my family's tradition.
That's cool.
So we do rack a lamb with like lamb chops.
Oh yeah.
And a shepherd's pie.
Mm.
And my mother is a leprechaun. Like,
meaning
like she's a real leprechaun. She loves St. Patrick's Day. She runs a daycare and she turns everything green.
Got cottage it. So cheese. No pot of gold. She's not a small wee.
Oh no, she's not small, but she's a mighty in her spirit.
Oh really?
Her fervor for the high holy days.
Fervor.
Oh yes.
So much fervor. She's got all the fervor.
Oh, she's got all the fervor of a leprechaun.
Okay.
Okay, anyways. I could go on forever,
please,
like that.
Please don't.
Yeah, it's... I love my mother so much, and...
Disclaimer.
Yes. Again, I love you, Mom. But... The inserting of family traditions or starting family traditions, especially food, I really hope that my kids would take the things that we have done and sort of go with them.
Yeah.
And that be part of their, you know, their family traditions as they're growing up and moving into their own families.
Are you teaching them to cook the recipes as well too, or are they just sort of like showing up on the table?
Well, my oldest son Caleb is actually a pretty good cook.
Oh, cool.
He'll do things just on a whim. I just made a quiche just cause I'm totally cool with that. And he's very self-sufficient. The other one, well, there's a bag of chips and he really enjoys chips and snack foods and all of that stuff. And I love my son Seth.
I love you, Seth, even though, you know,
even though this is part of your stuff. No, I love my children very, very much. And honestly, we've been,
this is Seth and my son, he's into chips.
He's a real connoisseur of Doritos.
Yeah.
To sort of jump from St. Patrick's Day and my family tradition, we have been all over the world. We've been to Nepal several times, and it's cool that I've been able to get experiences to experience different kinds of foods and different kinds of culture in people's homes with my kids. We went to Nepal one time, and we were in Kathmandu, and we were guests at a people's house, and they were Nwari. Kathmandu is a very Nwari centric city.
Mm-hmm.
Nwari is one of the bigger tribal groups in Kathmandu. But pretty much their whole focus, if you come into their house and they offer you food, basically they just want to make you burst.
Okay.
Like, what, you have a little space on your plate, let me put more on it. Nwari, it's amazing. The hospitality is unbelievable. This gentleman,
so generous, yeah,
so generous, and so they enjoyed having people in the house, but they enjoyed making sure that you were fed, satisfied, and just well taken care of and well thought of. And I left that meal that day incredibly humbled that we had been in these people's houses, in these people's house, and been able to experience that kind of thing. And I'm thankful that my kids got to experience that, because that's not a normal Western way to do it. We sort of have people over and we can enjoy their company, but we don't necessarily always treat them like you're an honored guest.
My dad made this distinction when I was growing up about some people's homes. You'll go over there, and the first thing they'll offer you is a drink. That's not uncommon. There's nothing wrong with that. That's great. Like, welcome. Let me give you a libation. Like, something to, you know, put your feet up, relax. You're in my place. Let me take care of you. But I remember growing up in a house where, like, the first thing people were offered was like a meal. Like, oh, you look hungry. Have you eaten today? And like, oh, I'll just make you something. And then like, we'll come down like, you know, potato salad, like two, like triple decker club sandwich, you know, potato salad, coleslaw, you know, bag of chips, some fruit. We'll just all like, that's just for the one person. My mom would just make that for them, or my dad would just bring a lot of food to the table, or like a lot of cheeses, or not a lot of cured meats growing up, but like, you know, he'd make a thing. Like he there was an effort made to just bring people into the home and like break the ice, because, you know, a lot of people coming there, they didn't need the ice broken because they're, you know, family, friends or whatever. But it was just eat something.
Mm-hmm.
Just eat. Just sit down and eat. And just the act of eating was a social exercise. So it was just about, we're going to talk, we're going to hang out, we're going to shoot the shit, but we're going to be eating while we're doing it. And it was this really lovely thing. Yeah, there was drinks as well, too. It wasn't one, they weren't mutually exclusive. It was just, there was this primary focus on making food the priority. And so, when I think about like the kind of home that I think about when I have friends over, or the homes that I really enjoy going to, are people who are also in that way, you know, in that food is a priority, and it's a celebration. And it's like, let's do this. Let's eat mm-hmm. together. You know, like, I mean, it's not uncommon for Eric and I to like, let's go order 100 oysters and let's eat them all. Hopefully not drink an entire bottle of vodka like we did last time, although that's going to happen again this year. But, you know, like, there's a... professionally, you don't get to enjoy it in that way. And so I think that's why my friends right now and the homes of my friends and the way that we gather around food is such an important thing for me to keep. It's because I spend so much time cooking professionally, but I don't... it doesn't bother me that I want to cook at home. Like, it's not something I avoid. But I'm so appreciative when I get to cook with my friends and enjoy the meal. Right? Because normally after I cook the meal, someone else enjoys it. They pay me for it, and then I make another meal, and I make another meal, and I make another meal. But to be involved in the process is really special. So when I go home for the holidays, like when I go home for Passover today, my mom will have done everything, and I just get to be, I would like to be more involved in the cooking process, but, you know, if I can leave early enough, I'll be able to do that, be able to help out. But I like it that no one's asking anything of me. I show up at the house and there's food, and I want to help, but I guess the point is just like, it's very nurturing. And it's that same hospitality that you're talking about with the Noiré. Is like, there's always more food to eat. Can I give you something to take home? Can, you know, like, do you have enough? Do you want to bring some to your friends? Do you want to bring some, you know, to your employees? Do you want to do this? And my mom's proud of her food, and it's a beautiful thing. And she's a great cook. And I'm glad to have these things in my life again. Not again, but I'm glad to have these things in my life, both historically speaking, to draw upon, like, from my memories with my dad at the head of the table and telling this, you know, trying to navigate or orchestrate this full Seder thing that was supposed to take. I mean, by the way, the Haggadah is meant to be read before, like, a significant part of the section is meant to be read before the meal begins. And so, of course, like, me and the table, that was the big reason for the heckling, was like, let's go. And actually, my grandmother, she would, when she was alive, she would like sort of roll her eyes, and she'd be like, but she would sort of bang the table and be like, let's go, Steve, let's get it going here, I'm dying. And like, that's pretty beautiful memories. Those are the ones I really enjoy. And so I guess I'm sort of rambling on the same sentiment, but yeah. These are the memories that I'm proud to have, you know?
I think it's important to talk about those things too, and just accept the time. And we've talked about the just enjoying the moment on this podcast and savoring the time that you have and sort of not going too far ahead, but being right there and thinking about it.
Yeah. So. If I have a home one day, that's what I'd like to make sure that I can do is to offer that kind of hospitality that's been offered to me for all these years, you know, like, especially like getting into this community here, having dinner with friends has been such a treat. And honestly, it's the thing I look forward to the most post pandemic is like just dinner with friends, man. Mm-hmm. You know, like three or four nights a week, man, you know, it doesn't need to be a full meal. Sometimes it's just, you know, a bag of chips and talking shit and a couple glasses of scotch. But it's just the social network. There's a lot of incredible, beautiful people who have settled into this community, and it's really nice to be a part of it. And it's just nice to just cruise over to someone's house after work and just have a beer. It's like, it's great. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't necessarily grow up with that, but like, I always loved when I had friends who were sort of in walking distance of my house, you know, just like on my way home, like I want to stop by and hang out. And so it feels really good. I wish that we were all a little closer, and my mom wants to retire to Florida, but I'm keep trying to get her to retire up here to Williamstown. Because, you know, why not?
Yeah.
Be great. It'd be great to have her around and be able to have those matzo balls at my disposal anytime.
Yes. So we are coming up on the hour mark. I just want to say thank you to anyone who has listened to our podcast.
It's a real thing.
Since it is a real thing, thank you so much to all the people who have listened to us talking and talked about it. We've had several shares, and just we appreciate it very much. We thank you that you will give us the time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm impressed that we did this. Like, it was just off the bat. Like, it was something we talked about for a year, and now we're doing it.
Four episodes in, which is not a lot in a podcast, but it is a huge step for us. And I'm actually really enjoying these times on Saturday mornings just talking.
Yeah, man, it's nice. And like, there's no agenda. You know, it's just a couple of dudes just shooting the shit over a couple of cups of coffee
and records,
and you know, just talking about things that just really, literally, there's just the two of us talking here. So I hope you enjoy it. And I mean, I don't know if there's things you think you want us to talk about, like throw some ideas. Like we're talking.
Yeah. Yeah. And, at some point will you hope to have some guests and, I know that's in the works a little bit. So,
yeah.
I don't know if they'll be willing to get up at 5 a.m, but maybe, I guess we'll see what happens.
Do we have the drive show with Gabe and Aaron? Come on, man.
That's right. So, we're going to end this evening, this morning. It's not evening yet. With a song called Someday We'll Be Together. Mm. And it's so much of a sentiment over this pandemic year. I keep going back to songs that just, you're like longing for times when you can be together and hanging out with people and just enjoying company and not worrying about wearing masks and staying far enough away from people. This will be the end of the show. Happy Passover, everyone.
Chag Sameach, everybody.
That's right. So someday.
Yeah, that, man.
I didn't know how to, say it.
No, but I'm just busting your balls, man. Yeah, that. Yeah,
that guy, he's a jerk.
Yeah.
Him and his Rabbi Shalom. It was supposed to be like a Chef Boyardee.
I got you, dude. It's okay.
Anyway. I hope you guys have a great week, and we'll see you on episode 5.
All right, see you next week.
See. Sometimes. Yes, you will. Sometimes.